Products versus Lockhart. Mr. Pretty, you're back on, or Mr. Creasy.
Judge Huff, this is Vernon Pretty. I'll be arguing this case this morning.
All right, and is counsel for the appellee present?
Yes, sir. This is Dan Beeger, and I'm here for the appellee.
Excellent. All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Pretty. We're ready when you are. Do you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes.
Yes, sir. All right. Go ahead. Please, please.
May it please the Court, my name is Vernon Pretty. I'm here on behalf of Power Distribution Products this morning. This is an unusual fact pattern. Mr. Lockhart was working for Power Distributions and was essentially called into his boss's office to address a series of failures in some transformers which were damaged by faulty installations, and along with two other co-workers, he was written up for the poor workmanship and the damages amounting to $90,000. To make a long story short, Mr. Lockhart got very angry. He wouldn't sign an acknowledgement of his poor performance. He wasn't being fired. He was just being written up. And he got, as he admitted, his temper got the best of him. He stormed out and announced that he was quitting.
This is Judge Huff. What evidence was there that he actually resigned? And because it strikes me that the employer, given the commission's ruling, the employer is being forced to hire the employee back. But the employee, it looks like there was a divergence. The statement made by the claimant, the employee, was, it's been nice knowing you, but then he goes back to the line and continues working, so his actions are inconsistent with his comment. Doesn't the commission get to decide that, well, he really didn't resign?
Well, Your Honor, I don't believe that that's what, in fact, they did. I mean, what the deputy did was essentially say that he could, by simply walking up and saying he'd like his job back, that that cured the problem. It was a technical cure, and that therefore they said that he had offered to come back at his not his pre-injury wage, but at the wage that he was being accorded work
the light duty, basically, right?
Light duty work, right. And by the time he had, there's really no debate that he did in essence storm out and say he had resigned. And other workers had heard him say he had resigned. There was no written resignation, and apparently, ultimately, in fairly short order, he decided that what he had done was not a good idea. Unfortunately,
Mr.
by the
Pretty,
time that
Mr. Pretty, this is Judge
yes,
Petty.
Sir.
How do you distinguish K&L Trucking and Thompson holding that benefits may be resumed when the claimant ceases his refusal to accept selective employment?
Your Honor, I recognize that the Thompson case. It's a, I think from Court of Appeals number three, where we and the commission felt it was that it wasn't convincing to them, but the point that we made was that the Clements versus Riverside Walter Reed Hospital and the Hillcrest Manor versus Underwood cases, in essence, flesh out the fairly simple in the sense that it was clear, but it was not particularly dealt with in particularly serious way, but not a fleshed out way, that Clements v. Riverside and particularly Hillcrest Manor gives you put some meat on the bones, and that's from a 35 Virginia Appellate 31, puts meat on the bones of when just coming back and saying, I want it back. And it looked at, particularly in Hillcrest Manor, that claimants refused to offer full-time employment and immediately accepted part-time light-duty employment, and likewise continued part-time selective employment with Hillcrest. And so it, those cases, the Clements versus Riverside Walter Reed and Hillcrest Manor, really establish that there is an ongoing, accepted ongoing employment to one degree or another by the employee after he had refused the offer of full-time employment. Here, what we've got is somebody who had the sense that he had made a mistake. He acknowledged that he was hot-headed and in short, wanted to go back to work. But simply showing up at your station and indicating you wanted to work doesn't mean that you have that the employer has to honor that request, which doesn't mean that he can never get benefits. It just shifts the burden on him to go out and get work. The employer is not obliged to provide work when somebody just essentially quits. And what we would suggest is that's what happened, and that the Clements and Hillcrest Manor cases support the concept that there is some agreement to continue working. No such agreement existed, as is shown in the record. And that sort of, that gets us to part two of our brief that basically showed our position is that Mr. Lockhart bore the burden of proof to establish an entitlement to temporary total disability benefits or temporary partial disability benefits. What you see is that from his own mouth, Mr. Lockhart said that he was capable of his pre-injury job, that he expressed desire to have that job back and not the one that he was working on when he quit. He found that working in that department where they were putting together the transformers, that was no challenge. He didn't enjoy it. In fact, he described it as something a monkey could do. So you have in his own words coming out of it, is that basically, other than hoping to get his job back with Power Distribution, he didn't do anything to carry his burden of proving that he had sought light duty work, or for that matter, he has explained that he could do his pre-injury job, which means there was no, based on his own intention, there was no obligation by Power Distribution to give him any job, light duty or full duty, because by his own expressed view, he could do his pre-injury average weekly pre-injury job at his full pay after his inclusion of his job with Power Distribution. Between those two issues, between his own statement that he could perform his pre-injury job and didn't want the transformer department job because of the fact that he didn't apparently want to work with monkeys, that he is not entitled to any benefits. This was a case in which he was the one who was having to make the claim, having to carry his burden of proof, and not the employer.
Would you focus in your Massey versus Firmstone, this is Judge McCullough, in your Massey versus Firmstone argument, you focus on a limited segment of his testimony, but the Massey doctrine isn't as broad as is often thought. Looking at the totality of the record, is it all that clear that he is claiming he can do his former job?
It's certainly a statement he made. And the context of what he was saying was that it was work he could do. It was easier work that he could do, and that he didn't like his transformer assembly job.
Well, did the employer put him back to work at his old job?
No, sir, because of course
his old job
was because they fired him.
I thought he quit.
Well, it was an interesting question of whether it was a "I quit, you were fired" kind of situation. I guess technically speaking, he quit and they declined to. They found they wouldn't give him a position. So and an employer has no obligation once a person working under light duty restrictions, once he's able to perform his pre-injury job, his pre-injury job is not something they have to give him back, that they have to offer him that. If you can do your pre-injury job, then you are at your own devices from that point.
To what extent does it matter that the employer defended the claim on the basis not that the guy was fired, and therefore, hey, we properly terminated this hothead guy, you know, and so we don't have to deal with him anymore, as opposed to what they did here, which is defend on the basis that he refused selective employment. And so then that's why we're talking about cure, is because that was the way the employer defended it. I mean, how do we look past that?
Mr. Pretty, just so you're aware, you're into your rebuttal time, but please do answer the question.
Judge McCullough, that whole line of reasoning really stems from the way the deputy commissioner treated it.
I'm looking at your the employer's application for a hearing, which I don't recall is in the appendix, but I was able to get it because it was referenced in the hearing before the deputy. And the box that's checked is the employee refused selective employment. So, I mean, that's, anyway, that's what motivates my question. And I'm sorry to interrupt, but I wanted you to understand where I was coming from.
Well, even if you go with the concept of needing to go out and seek light duty work, there's nothing in the record to indicate that he did anything other than ask for his original job back. And the deputy commissioner took the viewpoint that simply asking to have it back was a cure, and that there, and in a setting where a cure is involved, if the claimant makes a valid cure, then he doesn't have to seek ongoing employment. Subject, I mean, that would suffice with his light duty job.
All right, thank you.
If the court has no further questions, I'd like to reserve whatever time is left.
Okay, Mr. Baker.
All right, we believe that the deputy commissioner and the full commission properly applied the Thompson holding, and we disagree with comments from counsel. I think Thompson says that when the employee advises his employer that he is willing to accept the work in good faith, the employer then does have an obligation to resume to hire him back and resume the payment of compensable injuries. Here, I mean, in some of the cases, the employee says that weeks and months after the refusal takes place. But here, I think it's even more compelling that the employee said that minutes, maybe an hour at the most, after he was startled by this write-up because he felt that he was building these units the way he had been taught, and then turned out he probably had been taught improperly. That's why everybody in the little group was being reprimanded. But he never left the premises, never left his job, never stopped working, and almost immediately calmed down and said, "Okay, I'll sign the reprimand."
This is Judge McCullough. Would this case be different if the employer had defended on the grounds that, you know, we fired him for just cause? I mean, there was defects in his workmanship, and when confronted with that, instead of accepting criticism, he, you know, blew up. I mean, I understand why he was mad, because he was doing what he was told to do, and that then turned out not to be good enough. But be that as it may, I mean, if once an employer rightly terminates an employee, then that's it. That's the end of the line. There's no need to offer anything, right?
Well, that's right. That's right. And if I understand that if he had been fired for cause, then different rules would apply. The Tinbrook case would probably apply. But the evidence wouldn't support that. The evidence doesn't support that he was fired. What his boss said was that after he cured his refusal, they called up to headquarters, and the headquarters advised them that they were going to hold him to his quit. That's what the evidence was, not that he was discharged.
Well, what's the legal authority? This is Judge Huff. What legal authority would permit the Workers' Compensation Commission to order that an employer hire back someone who has voluntarily resigned?
Well, I guess I take that back, that they're not obligated to hire him back, but I think he's cured his refusal, so they're obligated to pay his benefits. That would be correct what I said before. And to address the other parts of his argument, he did prove his continued he had restrictions, and he proved that by uncontradicted evidence from his treating physician, Dr. Trent. He also proved that he tried to market his residual capacity with uncontradicted testimony of applying at the Virginia Employment Commission and going to a job fair and speaking with several different potential employers, posting his resume on Monster.com. So all of that evidence is in the record and really was not contradicted by the employer. Unless there's some questions, that's all I have to argue.
Right. Hearing no further questions, Mr. Pretty, your time was very close to ended when you were given a question. Is there anything more that you need to say in 1 minute or less?
That's a challenge. basically, the whole concept of cure just sort of materialized from the deputy commissioner's review, presentation of her finding that there was never a formal presentation of a cure by the claimant. It was he quit and he didn't actually put forward evidence of a cure.
All right.
Was that 1 minute?
Close enough.
It really is. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much to both of you for a case well argued. The case is submitted, and we'll now move on to the final merit case on the docket, David Lee.